The death toll for the Christchurch terror attack has climbed to 50 this morning, while a further 36 people remain in hospital, two in a critical condition. Tight security remains in place around the city's mosques as the city struggles to come to terms with the aftermath of this attack. Australian Brenton Tarrant has been charged with murder and is being held in a Christchurch jail awaiting further charges. Hugh Remington is on the ground, as I say, in Christchurch, and he joins us now. Hello, Hugh. Welcome to your show.
Thank you. They're doing a fine job.
Now, the community there must still be reeling from this.
Look, there's no doubt about that. Late last night, way past 10 p.m, there were still people arriving at the various memorial sites that have turned up around the city and near the mosque, as near as people can get, because roads are still closed off, but also against a fence near the hospital and other locations as well. A lot of places where people are laying flowers down and leaving messages, tea light candles, New Zealand flags, lots of slogans, many of them written in Māori, including a slogan, Kia Kaha, which means stay strong, which was essentially emerged as a sort of unofficial, I think now it's effectively an official slogan for the city of Christchurch. It emerged after the earthquake in 2011, which is so devastating to this town. And that slogan again being repeated today, people bewildered, very somber, but very determined en masse to say that they will come out of this stronger.
So, Hugh, now we're starting to get some personal stories, of course, of the victims from their families. And amidst all of that, some great acts of heroism.
Yes, it is starting to emerge a little bit about what happened, moment by moment what happened. There was one man who seemed to discourage the shooter at the second mosque, the Linwood Mosque, by running out. He found the first thing that he could find, which was a credit card swipe machine, and just grabbed it and ran out and threw it at him. The gunman went back to his car, it seems, and got another gun, and then went back in and continued shooting. And this same person who'd run a little further along realized that he had discarded a gun, one of his guns, and he went back and picked up this gun, found the magazine was empty. But then, as he saw the gunman coming back again, apparently to get another weapon, he smashed the empty gun that was a semi-automatic rifle through and into the windscreen of the car, and believes that distracted and made the gunman sufficiently alarmed or frightened that he drove off from there and was caught soon afterwards.
Right.
Because what we saw in the first mosque was that he knew he was under no threat, so he went in the first time and committed a whole bunch of shootings. He shot 100, and I counted the bullets, he counted 148 shots in 107 seconds, and then returned to the car, picked up a second semi-automatic with a telescopic sight, and went back in again. And he had this calmness about him as he was doing it, but by the second one, it seems he was able to be spooked off by this guy. There was another person who reached for the gun and seems briefly to have been able to sort of stop him shooting. But what happened to that person, it's not clear. And I spoke to a man, Ahmed Khan, who, like a couple of these others, was a refugee from Afghanistan, who came here some years ago as a child. And he ran out initially when he heard shooting at the Linwood Mosque and ran out. He saw a body on the ground and ran out to help. The gunman saw him and shot at him, but he ducked and the bullet missed him. And he ran back inside, shouted at everyone to get out of the way. When he came in and was shooting, he missed Ahmed Khan, but shot other people. And Ahmed was, when the gunman left at that initial stage, Ahmed was trying to look after a small child. He said less than one had been shot in the leg, but also a man had been shot in the chest, and who was badly wounded and was trying to get someone to help him call his mum in India. Mm. And he was trying to reassure him that the police were coming, etc. And the gunman came back in again, and while he was scraping this man, the gunman shot the wounded man again in the head.
Oh, I mean,
just astonishing story.
Yeah, and these stories of toddlers being shot and killed is absolutely heartbreaking.
Merciless is completely remorseless, merciless killing.
Yeah. Hugh, one man has appeared in court. Do we know at this stage whether the gunman acted alone? Because there was some suggestion and some reporting that two others acted after the shooting.
So three other people were arrested at the time. We're starting to get a little bit more detail on that. One of them has now been completely eliminated. He was someone who heard shooting and went to see if he could help, but went armed. So he was found by police in the vicinity with a gun, and naturally they treated him immediately as a high suspect, but they're completely satisfied. He had nothing to do with it. He's gone. But there are two others being held. But the police used an interesting phrase today. The police commissioner said that the other two were found with firearms in the vicinity but are, quote, tangential to this matter. So it seems as though at the moment, although they're still being held, they're not perceived to be prime suspects in a conspiracy or as being enablers. But one of the key questions, why did he come to Christchurch? The guy had no connections in Christchurch. Why did he come here? This is a town. He talks in his manifesto, so-called, of an invasion. But this is a town which had a total population of about 2,500, less than 2,500 Muslims living quietly. There'd never been any violence in this place. Basically, about 1 in 25 of the Muslim population of Christchurch was shot, either dead or wounded. 1 in 25.
Gosh.
This is an astonishing slaughter of a small community, and he attacked them. Why did he pick this place? Was it because gun laws were lax? Was it because they were also a white supremacist movement here, which locals say does exist, who were able to give him cover and guidance?
Let me ask you about that white supremacist movement over there, Hugh, because there has been some talk this morning of neo-Nazi activity in the city. What is that all about?
Yes, it's funny because I come from this town and I've spoken to old friends and they've said, yes, look, it's true. There's this kind of fringe. One of them described them to me as sort of neo-Nazi skinhead druggies with swastika tattoos. They're seen as nasty, but fundamentally irrelevant. There was a so-called rally of them, a small number of people out chanting just a few weeks ago. Intriguingly, across New Zealand, there is perception that Christchurch is a centre for this more than other parts of the country. So we're yet to get to how much these people may be actively involved. But interestingly enough, a woman who runs an organisation called Organise Aotearoa, which is Aotearoa being the Maori name for New Zealand, the other official name, in reference to the now plans to tighten up gun laws, says, look, it's too late. These people are organised. The slack gun laws have given them a chance to stockpile weapons. And she says that Emmy Rackety is her name. She says that there is every chance. There are cells there very well armed and capable of acting again. So while this was an Australian who came here, there is within New Zealand a sense that there are certainly fellow travellers in New Zealand.
Hugh, thank you so much.
Thank you, Liz.
That's Hugh Rimmington, who has been sent to Christchurch to cover the story of the mosque massacre.